Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest this morning is Susan Heim. She is a longstanding author and editor specializing in parenting, multiples, women's, and Christian issues. Her book includes Chicken Soup for the Soul, Devotional Stories for Women, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Twins and More, Chicken Soup for the Soul, All in the Family. Susan's articles and stories have appeared in many books, websites, and magazines, including Twins Magazine and Angel on Earth. She writes an online column for Mommy's Magazine called Loving and Living with Twins and Multiples. Susan is also the founder of Twins Talk, a website where parents share tips, advice, stories about raising twins and multiples. She's here this morning to talk about her latest book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, All in the Family. Good morning, Susan. Welcome back to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm great. Good morning, Johnny. It's great to be back.
Glad to have you back. It's been wonderful, and I really enjoyed reading All in the Family. The stories were moving. It gives a great snapshot of real life, real situation experiences of ordinary people who I think everyone could relate to. So, you know, so it's just very, very exciting. There's so many wonderful stories, as a matter of fact, that I have a tough time in choosing certain things, stories that I want to highlight.
Oh, you can imagine the tough time we had picking the stories for the book. We got thousands of fabulous stories for this book.
I noticed that. It's quite amazing. But I think in the end, ordinary people could relate to someone else, and I think that's what I enjoy the most about this book. But before we get into the gist of your wonderful book, please give us a quick background about yourself. Please tell us about your childhood life with your family and the community you grew up in for our new listeners this morning.
Okay. Well, I currently live in Florida, but I was actually born and raised in Michigan. I have two parents who are still together and a younger sister who's now a school teacher. And I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, which is actually the capital of Michigan, as most of you probably know. But it's more, it has a small town feel to it. You know, it's not like one of the bigger cities in Michigan, like Detroit or Grand Rapids. So, you know, I had a pretty typical Midwestern growing up life. Went to Michigan State University and ended up moving to Florida after college. So.
That's fantastic. How long have you been in Florida now?
I've been in Florida since January of 1987, so I've actually lived in Florida now longer than I've lived in Michigan. But
I understand that. Same thing for me. I've been in the United States longer than I've been in Malaysia, where I grew up. Well, how's your family getting ready for the holiday season?
Well, you know, it's funny. We have I have four sons, and three of my sons have birthdays in early December. So the holidays are kind of tough for me because until I get past those birthdays, it's hard to get in the holiday mode. You know, I'm still thinking about what are we going to do for their birthdays, and you know what. What am I going to get them? And so finally, now I'm at that stage. Last week were all the boys' birthdays, and so now we're starting to get ready for Christmas. I'm getting my shopping list together. We do have the tree up. We have a Christmas tree up and our decorations, and we normally do that Thanksgiving weekend. And my husband, fortunately, is our Christmas cookie maker. I got lucky there. He likes to cook, so he makes the Christmas cookies. So we went out this past weekend and bought all the ingredients for the cookies. And so he's going to be working on that this week, and I'll work on the shopping. And that's how we get ready for Christmas.
Well, it's a wonderful family project, though, you know, when you get involved with something like that. So, and especially if he enjoys cooking and doing those kind of things. And well, it's being a part of the big family picture, so that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
You are a twin expert, so any advice for any families who are going through the changes in their lives right now in celebrating their first twins' Christmas?
Well, that first Christmas with twins it's interesting because twins are so much work, you know, when they're babies. And so I think probably the best advice I could give twins parents is just to let go of any expectations that you might have of that perfect Christmas, you know. Uh-huh. Don't worry about, you know, if every decoration doesn't get up or the tree looks perfect or you've got got all kinds of presents, because, you know, this is really just the time to enjoy your family and to be with them. And, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. And the twins are going to be not going to remember what's going on. They're going to be too young, you know. So just let go of all that and just enjoy the holiday.
Hey, that's what video cameras are for now, you know.
Exactly. And everything that goes wrong makes for a great memory later on, as we'll find out when we talk about this book. So
there you go. I mean, I think that's what it's all about. It's about just the, enjoying the spirit of Christmas
right.
with the family. You have written a number of books, and some of them are with Chicken Soup for the Soul series. Please tell us how and when did this relationship begin?
Well, it actually began many years ago. I started out working as a freelance editor for Chicken Soup for the Soul. I was working for an educational publishing company at the time, and somebody that I worked with there took a job with the original publisher of Chicken Soup for the Soul. And she knew, at that time I was a single mom, and so I was, you know, money was tight. I was always looking to make a little bit extra, and so she started sending me freelance proofreading and editing jobs, and many of those happened to be Chicken Soup for the Soul books. And so I just really enjoyed them. I loved the books, you know, enjoyed the stories. And at some point, I think it was about 2000, they actually had an opening at the company for a full-time editor, and I applied for the job, and I got the job. So I started working on them full-time, and I stayed with the publisher until December of 2003 when I had my twins. And that was the point when I decided to go back to freelance editing. And so I continued to work with Chicken Soup as a freelance editor again. And then a couple of years ago, Chicken Soup for the Soul actually acquired a new publisher. And so I contacted them and told them that I was still really interested in working on Chicken Soup for the Soul books. And so it's just continued. It's been wonderful. You know, we decided to do a twins book, and since I had twins, it seemed like the perfect fit for me to co-author that book, and things just snowballed from there. So it's been wonderful. I love these books, and it's I'm fortunate to have a career that I really enjoy.
That's wonderful to hear, because I think what you guys are doing are fantastic in terms of making a positive difference in people's lives and everything else. And no one knew, you know, the story about Jack Canfield and the way it started out. And now some 10-plus years later, you know, looking back, and it's like, wow, you know, look at the things that that has happened. And it's just like far beyond, I think, everyone's imagination. What inspired you to write?
You know, I think it's a desire really to leave a legacy. It sounds kind of cliche, but I've always been really fascinated by the fact that so many people who have passed away, like, you know, Charles Dickens, Jane Austen, someone like that, you know, they've been dead for a long time, and yet everybody knows their name. Everybody is still reading their stories and enjoying what they did, and you know, they live on through what they've written. And I've just always been really fascinated by that concept, and wanted to leave something behind for my family and for future generations.
That's very interesting, though, because I think a lot of times we just don't realize that how important those things are, because when we're in it every day, we tend not to appreciate those kind of things, you know. I grew up in the in an environment where, of course, not many people read and write in my parents' generation at that time, obviously. But what's fascinating about it was that, you know, when we look back in time, grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents, and things were handed down by storytelling, verbal storytelling. And now we all have the opportunity to actually write things now.
That's right.
Yeah,
right.
So that, to me, it's a wonderful means of, like you say, preserving some of the wonderful memories that we will encounter and in time appreciate, better or worse, we'll appreciate down the road, you know. So
that's right.
That's the fascinating part about it. Well, what can readers get from reading this wonderful book?
Well, I hope that they will figure out, like you were saying about your family in Malaysia, that even though we all come from different backgrounds and different places, we might speak different languages, but I think deep down we're all more alike than we are different. You know, all of our families have their squabbles and their disagreements, and we all have some strange relatives and, you know, disastrous weddings and that kind of thing. But, you know, I think this when you read the stories in this book, you just realize that, you know what, my family might be strange, but so is everybody else's. You know, we might as well just embrace our differences and realize that we're all a lot more alike than we think we are.
No, it's true, because people don't realize that, you know, just because I'm living in Malaysia or in China or in Russia, that I'm thinking, well, I'm different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. Because
yeah.
when it's all said and done, and that's the beauty of whether it's about the unconditional love or about family affairs, of relationship between parents, siblings, and everyone else, is when it's all said and done, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just circumstances. And believe it or not, even the situations and circumstances, like you were saying, everybody celebrates wedding. Everybody celebrates family reunion. So it's not much different. And then having the opportunity to read about the connections that somebody else is experiencing halfway around the world, it's fairly wonderful, because it brings the globe a whole lot smaller.
It does. I mean, I'm sure you grew up having squabbles with your siblings and doing you know, the same things that all of us did here in the United States.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I tell you what, I think my sister celebrated the day that I left. I know certainly for sure in terms of her love life, because everyone mistook that we were dating, because I was taking her to work every day, and everybody thought that, you know, we were boyfriends and girlfriends, so no guys who approached her, you know, and it was so funny. I mean, I was actually younger than her, 6 years younger than her, and but somehow I outgrew her, and I was I'm 5'9", and just like around 5 foot or 5'2", and so people thought that, oh, wow, you know, Rosalind's got a boyfriend, so nobody approached her.
So she was happy to get rid of you.
Yeah, you know, it was so funny. I mean, it's like, you know, and all her friends would tease, and then later, like, what would happen was that, you know, the guys would be asking her working colleagues and say, you know, what happened to her? Did they break up or something? And the women, the girls would be saying, you moron, you know, that's her brother.
That was her brother.
You know, and also, like, whoa, you have all these suitors, you know, coming in and trying to impress her, you know. It was really funny. But anyway, I have selected some wonderful stories from the various subtitles, and I want to highlight them as points of discussion for us. And please, you know, give us a short rundown about these stories and their authors as we discuss the stories.
Okay.
Let's start off with the topic, Eccentrics Auras, and the topic is the story is about preserving family plastic by Chantel Panazzo.
Yeah, this is actually the first story in the book, because it's one of my favorites, and this is a great example of a story about someone. The author, as you said, her name is Chantel Panazzo, and she's an American who now lives in Switzerland. And she's a writer, and she travels all over the world. But whenever she comes home to Chicago, where her parents still live, it's like she's back to her childhood. You know, some things never change, and she's back home. And one of the quirks that her father has is that he covers everything in plastic. He feels the need to preserve everything perfectly. And for instance, they have on their front porch these chairs sitting on the front porch, and they're these 10-year-old white plastic chairs. They're worth probably about $10, and the father covers them in plastic garbage bags because he wants them to look like new. And, of course, this drives the author's mother absolutely crazy. You know, she's so embarrassed that there's these ugly garbage bags sitting on the porch. So the mother's tired of fighting with the father over this quirk. You know, she knows that she's never going to change him. He's always going to cover everything in plastic. And so so the daughter's writing about this, and she can sympathize with her mother. She thinks that it's kind of crazy that he covers everything in plastic. But at the same time, she goes, one day she goes into her parents' bedroom and she sees on her father's dresser a drawing that she had made when she was 5 years old in kindergarten. It was a drawing of a caterpillar.
Mm-hmm.
And her father had, of course, perfectly preserved the drawing in a little plastic sandwich bag.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked just like it did when she was 5 years old. And so it's just a wonderful story of acceptance, because she realizes that even though, you know, her father has this strange habit,
right,
that without it, you know, she wouldn't have this beautiful little keepsake that he had saved, you know, that it's just very sweet that that she found her drawing and that she can have a little compassion for her father's eccentricity. So,
well, what's interesting about that story is that I remember growing up, I mean, I've seen that here in the United States as well as in Malaysia. And again, you know, at first you're thinking like, okay, why spend all the money and buy all these wonderful things and then you're covering it up? Or better still, I mean, in this case, of course, it's, you know, black, bags that you can't really see right through it. But some of them, I've seen where things are covered with clear plastics.
Yeah, like
and
a
then,
couch.
You know, it's like, wow. So I could, you know, see, you know, it's like, whoa, you know, what's the reason behind this? But her story certainly touched the heart and moved the soul, simply because it's something very different, because to them, to the people that are doing it, there's a reason behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to preserve the captured moment.
That's true.
That's something very special. And I can understand now, and looking back at some of the things, whether it's my, you know, the way my dad preserved, you know, I know, like, we used to have, like, certain plastic cover on certain things, and I'm not, the ones that you can see through, obviously. And I can understand now, because guess what? The grandchildren today are enjoying that.
Yes. He saved it for future generations to
enjoy.
Right,
and so that's quite fascinating. Now, whether that was his intention at that time, it doesn't matter. The fact that, you know, it was a wonderful time capsule in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's the wonderful story behind that. And, of course, same author again. It was quite interesting. Now it's a story about her mom. And of course, the title is The Family Collection. So why don't you lead us through to that?
Okay. Well, it turns out that the author's father isn't the only one with the strange quirk. Her mother also has a strange quirk, which it seems the women in her whole family have, and that is that they tend to collect things wherever they go. For instance, the author, whom I said lives in Europe, tends to travel a lot and stay in hotels. And so she has this little habit of acquiring hotel lotions and soaps, you know, those little bottles of shampoo
mm-hmm.
and things.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes them, and she just collects them.
Mm-hmm.
And her mom does the same thing at restaurants. She takes all the mints and the napkins from the restaurants. And her grandmother always took menus from
mm-hmm.
restaurants wherever they
mm-hmm.
went. She would take the menu, she would take the napkins, and at her
mm-hmm.
home, she would actually have a drawer for each of these things. She had a drawer filled with napkins, a drawer filled with menus, a drawer filled with those
mm-hmm.
paper placemats. They might have been all stained and, you know, have food on them and everything, but she
mm-hmm.
had this strange habit of collecting them. And the author writes about how when she was a child, she really didn't think it was that weird, because she loved to look through those things.
Mm-hmm.
She would look,
mm-hmm.
go in her grandma's drawer and look at all the things that she had collected. And after her grandmother died, even though they all thought, gosh, what is all this junk, you know, we can finally get rid of it.
Right.
Her grandfather couldn't bear to part with these collections that her grandmother had put together, because it was an expression of who she was and you know, her uniqueness and the things that she enjoyed. So,
again, it's a preservation of memories, wonderful memories.
It is. It is. And a celebration of our uniqueness and our personality.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that's something that they will always remember about their family. And it's something they'll always talk about. And the stories will be passed down through the generations about, you know, crazy grandma collecting these menus from. But it's a
right.
great story. You know, it's
yeah.
a great memory for everybody to talk about. And
it comes back again to generations, because now we have cameras, you know, up to the yazoo, and you, every corner that you go, someone is snapping something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And back then, I'm sure that's, you know, not everyone is privileged to have a 35-millimeter camera, much less to say instant or whatever you want to call it. And so in order to preserve those momentous occasions or something memorable, you would take something from the place that you've been.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter, I guess, whether it's a menu or a cigarette lighter or, you know, a matchstick box or anything like that, because it's something that you can come back to yourself and rekindle those wonderful memories, and you're able to. It's a trigger, actually, to start talking about things.
It is. Like, I have a charm bracelet, and whenever I travel someplace, I'll get a little silver charm and put it on my charm bracelet.
Uh-huh.
And the other day, I was showing it to my twins, and
you know,
they were asking, what are those charms? And as I went through it, I would look at the various charms, and it would remind me of places where I had been, and I could tell my boys the stories about the places I'd seen and where I got those particular charms.
Right. And those are verbal stories that are not actually... that cannot be told in pictures,
mm-hmm.
because and this is the kind of, you know, there's a difference here between picture stories and actual verbal stories in many
mm-hmm.
ways.
There is. I mean, you can say a lot more verbally and recall a lot more than
you
can just in a single snapshot.
Right, right. Well, you're being in the moment
mm-hmm.
when you do that.
It actually takes you back to that moment. Yeah.
Right. Our next title is In-Laws and Outlaws. This is kind of fun. So we'll start off with The Puzzle by Cynthia Morningstar.
Okay, yes, this is a great chapter in the book because it is about our often tempestuous relationships with in-laws, mother,
mm-hmm.
particularly mother-in-laws, it seems to be for some reason. This particular story is told by a pastor's wife.
Mm-hmm.
She's a former librarian and a piano teacher, and she tells a story about how she grew up in the early 60s, and she and her brother and sister went Christmas shopping with her father.
Mm-hmm.
And her father had a very poor relationship with his mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they couldn't stand each other. And so he had the misfortune of drawing her name in the Secret Santa drawing that they do every year. The family
mm-hmm.
gets together and, you know, they pick a name, and whoever's name you pick, you have to
mm-hmm.
get them a present. So he
mm-hmm.
drew his mother-in-law, which was like the worst person he could have gotten. And so they're at the store, they're Christmas shopping, and their father is jumping up and down with glee because he has come across this 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle that looks impossible to put together. It's, you know, it's one of those where it just barely has any color variations. And he decides the one thing that he and his mother-in-law have always agreed on is that they don't like to do puzzles. So he has decided that he is going to buy this horrible puzzle for his mother-in-law for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So he's so happy he found the perfect gift. And you might be able to guess what happens after that. when they get to Christmas and they're opening the gifts, he discovers that his mother-in-law had also gotten his name for Christmas,
mm-hmm.
and when he opened the gift from her, she had gotten him a 2,000-piece puzzle that was even worse than the one that he got her. So, the story.
Revenge is a dish of coal. You see, that's what happens. You know.
Yeah. So they actually kind of came together in that moment, you know, and everybody shared
mm-hmm.
a chuckle because they, you know, they both were both were out to get each other in the same way. So.
And those are the wonderful moments in life that are priceless, I think, you know, if you look at it, because those are the, where you had mentioned just now about coming together, is the connections that otherwise wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's wonderful. Well, another one in In-Laws and Outlaws, Better or Worse by Edgy,
I think it's Aggie.
Welch.
Yeah. Well, this story is pretty typical. It's about a woman. She's a freelance writer, and she's writing about her wedding. And she and her fiancé are one of those people who really don't want a lot of fuss. They're just as happy to elope. You know, they don't want a big wedding. They just want to run off and get married. And unfortunately, both sides of their family have a totally different opinion of what this wedding should be. You know, they're telling them, oh, you have to have a nice wedding, you have to get married in a church, and you have to do all this. So so the bride and groom decide, okay, you know, we'll let them have their way, we'll have the nice wedding so we can make both sides of the family happy. And, of course, you know, the more they get into the plans, the more of a nightmare this wedding turns out to be, because nobody can agree on anything, whether it's the colors for the wedding or the party favors or the wording on the invitation, who's going to pay for what. You know, it turns out to be a complete nightmare. And by the time of the rehearsal dinner, nobody is even speaking to each other. his side won't speak to her side, and her side won't speak to the other side. And, you know, it's just a big mess. But the wedding goes through. Everything goes well. And, you know, after the wedding, the bride and groom decide that even though it wasn't exactly the wedding that they had planned, you know, that they had thought it would be, that it actually turned out for the best, because the husband and wife really stuck together through the whole thing. You know, while their relatives were all at war around them, they kind of came together and really came out stronger in the end. So
right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what it's all about, is all the intents, and everybody's got their own opinion and everything else. And believe me, this wedding scenario is not just happens in the U.S. It's all over the world. That's the good news and the bad news, I guess. In some ways, you know, it's normal, I guess, everywhere. And everybody's got its own take. And I remember talking to a friend of mine, and she was saying, you know, like, we have like 500 people. We have no idea who these people are. But hey, what
exactly.
The heck, you know, who cares?
Yeah, I think the wedding turns out to be more for the relatives than it is for the actual bride and groom.
Yeah. So
you know,
it's
time
quite
for everybody to get together.
Yeah, so it's a very different scenario. Well, on the next one is family vacations and reunions. And the topic is We'll Have Fun Yet by Stephen Lyons.
Right. This chapter is all about, it reminds me of like the Chevy Chase vacation movies, you know, where the family's always going on vacation or having a reunion or something. In this particular story, Stephen Lyons, he also happens to be an author and a speechwriter, and he writes about his family, and he comes from a very fractured family, which is pretty typical these days, especially in the United States, probably. For instance, the four original members of his family have been married a total of 12 times.
I know, that was kind of funny when I read that. You know, it's like, okay, it's not funny, but it's like, oh my gosh, you know, you're trying to keep track of everybody.
Yeah. I mean, their family tree is just all over the place, you know. And so this is the kind of person who's never really been much into family. You know, he never really thought family was important, because they always seemed to be in transition. So after high school, he took off. He grew up in the Midwest, and he took off, and he went west to Colorado and lived there for a lot of years. He never really saw his family, never really got together. And one year when he was almost 40 years old, he met one of his grandmothers for the very first time, which is, you know, very unusual. And when they got together, you know, they were trying to get to know each other. And the title of the story, it's called We'll Have Fun Yet, is actually a take on what his grandmother said to him. She was kind of trying to bridge the gap between them, and she gave his hand a little squeeze, and she said, you know, we'll have fun yet. And, you know, she was trying to make a connection with him. And after she died, he got a package in the mail, and it happened to be an envelope that had letters and journal pages and charts and pictures of things that his grandmother had saved from their family. And these were things that he had never known even existed and was never really interested in until that point. And the author says now, you know, now that he's grown up, he realizes that, you know, he really does crave family. He wants to know what his family is like and who these people are, and, you know, he really treasures now getting together and having these family reunions, you know, unlike the time he did when he was younger. So it's a nice portrait of really coming to appreciate having a family and having a family history.
It is. When I read that story, it's something that I could relate to. It's not that I'm running away from my families. Of course, I'm over here, and I'm the only one here. My mom and my sister, we're a small family in Malaysia. But having said that, I mean, on my mother's side, you know, everybody gets together once in a while and all that. I've been fortunate that I was back home in Malaysia about 2 years ago for a cousin's wedding. And it was wonderful to run into everybody that you know of, or seeing other cousins and everyone else. But I could relate to him in the sense that sometimes things happen, and of course in my situation it's not like, you know, everybody got divorced and married with somebody else and everything else. But for me personally, there is a disengagement because I came here when I was young and not within that circle. And then in my situation at one time, you know, people had asked me, said, well, you know, if you get married, do you want to have kids? I said, well, you know, it's really irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter to me because it's up to my wife. If she mm-hmm. wants kids, then we'll have kids. If she doesn't want to, then it doesn't matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
But as I gotten older, it's changed. I mean, I would like to have the family. I would like to have that family in the sense of that the connection.
Right, right.
And I got all this energy, I guess, from having the opportunity to be around those reunions and family gatherings and whatnot, and it changes my perspective about family and everything else.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I'm sure being away from your family for so long, you start to think about the possibility of building your own family and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
creating over here what you had over in Malaysia with all of your extended family and cousins and aunts and uncles and all that.
Right. It's just a connection. And a lot of times because you, and of course, will all this be smooth running? No. But it's what you want to make it out to be. In the end, that's what the story is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I enjoyed reading about that particular story. The next one is about forgiveness, Stubborn Love by C.J. Hines.
Right, right. Yeah, this story is about a mother. C.J. Hines is,
mm-hmm.
or the author C.J. Hines is a woman. She's a newspaper reporter and a writer, and she talks about her relationship with her father. And this is one of those cases where she and her father don't get along, probably because they're a little bit too much alike.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She and her mother were always very close growing up, and her mother passed away. And after that happened, she and her father really struggled to build some sort of a relationship. They both loved their mother very dearly, or her mother very dearly, but they grieved in different ways. You know, the author
mm-hmm.
would go to a counseling or grief support groups, and the father really withdrew and didn't want to talk to anybody or talk about things. So they've had this really tough relationship all these years. And after a while, the father ends up being diagnosed with congestive heart failure.
Mm-hmm.
And he really is in denial about his condition. You know, he
mm-hmm.
becomes very difficult. He wants to still take care of himself. He wants to drive. He wants to do things. And the daughter is in the uncomfortable position of, you know, trying to say, you need to slow down, you need to get some help, you can't drive anymore, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the mother or the writer and her father are really butting heads at this point. They're
mm-hmm.
both extremely
mm-hmm.
stubborn, and they're both butting heads and not getting along at all. And it's only really after the father's death that the author begins to realize, to understand her father, to realize
mm-hmm.
that, you know, he really wasn't being stubborn to try to drive her crazy, you know. But it was more of an attempt to maintain control over the things that he was losing in his life. You know, he
right.
was losing his independence and his health, and by being stubborn and trying to cling to that, he was trying to maintain control over the things that he was losing. And
right.
and the daughter really understood that at that point, that
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that he really needed that, because she's the same way. And so a very powerful story, I think, about a relationship that a lot of parents and children have, I think, being so much alike that they don't get along very well.
It is. You know, when I read that, it's something that we all have our own opinion, again, his approach in life and everything else, and obviously her father is a very strong person, Mm-hmm. And then you unfortunately go through this situation where you're slowly but surely the ground underneath you eroding slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're standing in this quicksand, and you're right, because you're trying to do your best to hold on to something. And, you know, and it's got nothing to do with just being old or anything like that. I think in our everyday life situations sometimes things that sort of like our circle of concerns and our circle of influence, because when it gone, when it, things go beyond our circle of influence, then we can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we react to it? And I think this story tells about us understanding that everybody has their own, zone or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
That they have to operate on. And I guess, you know, it's okay, you know, to work within those perimeters and having a better understanding. And, of course, the good news is that she did, you know, find that in the end, and seeing that there are a tremendous amount of wonderful things beneath all that. Notions of what had happened and everything else, which is just wonderful. And of course that brings us to a wonderful wedding story. Thanks for the memories. Wedding Adventures by John Bontello.
I think it's Bontello or
Bontello.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this is a great. Weddings are always a great topic for for family adventures. You know, everybody always has memories from weddings, and in this particular family, the author writes about how every wedding in their family tends to have some sort of a disaster happen, and he gives several examples of this. For instance, when his daughter got married, his brother slammed his hand in a car door. The best man got lost on the way to the chapel, and then the priest was late for the wedding because he got delayed at another wedding. All the members of the family were complaining that the seats were hard in the church. You know, it was just one thing after another at his daughter's wedding. So he said when his son got married, you know, they were happy because the wedding went off without a hitch, everything went perfectly, and then they went to the reception. And at the reception, they had one of those smoke machines on the dance floor that's just supposed to put like a nice little haze across the dance floor. Well, apparently one of the children at the reception discovered the smoke machine and turned it on high, and the reception hall started filling with these billowing clouds of smoke. Everybody's waiting around in smoke, which set off the fire alarm, and they couldn't figure out how to turn off the fire alarm, and the firefighters ended up showing up at the reception. So it was... That was quite a mess and a good memory for them. And even the author himself writes about his own wedding and how, I think this must have been a second wedding or something when he was older. And he talks about how his bride is walking down the aisle and they have an outdoor wedding. And she's walking down the aisle and all of a sudden she stops. You know, and she doesn't go any further down the aisle, and he's standing there going, oh, you know, what's wrong? Is she changing her mind? Is she hesitating? And it turns out, fortunately, it wasn't that serious, but it turns out that the heel of her shoe had gotten caught in one of the cobblestones in the walk that she was going up, and she couldn't move. She couldn't pull her foot out of there. So the groom had to run up and wrestle with her and practically knock her over, try and get her shoe out of the sidewalk so she could walk down the aisle and finally get married. So it's just a really cute story about, you know, how they just laugh because, you know, they almost dread weddings now, wondering what's going to go wrong at the next one, you know. But at the same time, of course, as the story shows, it really makes for some wonderful memories.
It is. I think if we just kind of let it go sometimes, you know, hey, whatever happens, just enjoy the moment.
Again, it's that need to give up the need for perfection, you know, to just go with the moment and laugh, you know, because if something can go wrong, it probably will. So
moments that makes wonderful memories, and so certainly it's how we want to take it. preserve it. And that's what makes the difference. The next one is, which is interesting, because the segment is called "Putting the Fun in Dysfunctional," and of course, God forbid, I mean the word dysfunctional. Oh my God, it hits us like a storm. But it's a wonderful story. The Unkindest Cut by Perry Perkins. I thought it was kind of really interesting.
It is. This is a cute story. Perry Perkins is an award-winning travel writer and a novelist, and so he writes a wonderful story about when he was just a little boy, and his parents didn't get along really well, and one of the battles that they always had was over his hair. When he was about 2 years old, he had these beautiful red ringlets in his hair, his gorgeous red gold hair. And this was his mother's pride and joy. She just loved his hair and thought it was so beautiful, and she refused to cut it. And the father, in the meantime, did not share her appreciation of his hair. Everybody kept telling him what a cute little girl he had, and his father and his brothers, you know, they pull the macho thing and say, you know, why don't you stand up to your wife and cut your son's hair and all that. So the husband was getting fed up. And so one day when the mother was out of the house, the author's father and his uncle and grandfather came over and they cut his hair. And not only did they cut it, but they messed it up so badly that they ended up having to almost shave it to just within a quarter inch of his head because it looked so bad. And so they cut off all these beautiful, beautiful curls, and you can imagine what happened when the mother came home. She was furious. She exploded. The father ended up spending a month sleeping on his mother's couch. The mother never really forgave him for it, and unfortunately, the author's hair, when it grew back, it grew back like a mud ugly. He calls it an ugly mud brown. You know, he never got those beautiful red curls back again. And this was like he thinks this was basically the turning point because his parents ended up getting divorced when he was 5 years
uh-oh,
old.
Uh-oh.
But it's, you know, it's a good story about how we tend to, you know, the little things that we tend to fight over can become major things between us. So,
it's what's interesting is that thank God it's not like there was one period of time where everybody has this little bowl cut, you know, where you put the bowl over your head and all around.
Yeah, it's true.
But it is a wonderful story. I think it sort of reminds us just those wonderful things, and obviously, this is something that he remembered all these years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's a wonderful, for lack of a better term, a wonderful keepsake in so many ways.
Mm-hmm. It is.
The next one is wonderful. It's about family secrets, and the topic is obviously family secrets. And the particular story is called A New Brother by Daniel Rockwell. I really like this story.
Yes, this is a really nice story. Daniel Rockwell actually contributes quite often to Chicken Soup for the Soul book. She's a really good writer. And this story talks about how she actually finds out that she has a brother that she never knew about when she's an adult. One day she was driving in the car with her father. Her mother had passed away, and she and her father were talking in the car. And her father suddenly blurted out that he and her mother had had a child before they got married.
Mm.
And this was back, you know, in the 1950s when this was, you know, this really wasn't considered acceptable. And
right.
So they sent her mother away to a maternity home, and she ended up having the baby there, and the baby was given up for adoption.
Mm-hmm.
And strangely enough, even though the mother and father did end up getting married and having more children, they never told their children that they had had this other child. And they probably never would have, except that the son contacted them years later. He found them somehow through the internet and wanted to meet them and meet his birth family. And so the father had no choice but to tell her, guess what, you know, surprise, you've got another brother. So it's really her story of finding out this fact and how it affected the whole family. You know, she and her two brothers that she grew up with, they all really had different reactions to getting this news, and she ended up taking it the best. You know, they did end up building a relationship with the new brother and getting to know each other's families. You know, her other brothers have been a little slower to come around, but but it's a really nice story about you know, having things come up from the past that you're not expecting.
Certainly, and again, it's all about society.
Mm-hmm.
It's what it's deemed right or wrong in the eyes of a court of public opinion, and certainly they have to make their own decisions. And the good news is that in the end, what is meant to be is meant to be. Where obviously the son took the time to locate the father or the parents, I guess, in this case.
Yeah.
And the good news is, of course, you know, in the end, in everyone, it's how you want to look at it, you know, and do you want to build or do you want to destroy or keep apart? And I think that's the essence of the story, in the sense that, hey, we do have a choice, even to this very day. Now, are we going to embrace this or are we not? We have that choice. And the goodness of this story is the fact that, you know, it's all about embracing family and so forth, which was very touching and wonderful.
It was. It is. And it's interesting how something that happened so many years ago it still impacts a family now. You know, this is an event that the father thought was in their past, that they had moved on from that, and yet some things never go away. You know, they're still going to affect the family for generations.
And the next one is Happy Horrible Holidays. Is Everyone Smiling by Andrea Langworthy.
Right. This is in a chapter called Happy Horrible Holidays, which pretty much says it all, you know, about the wonders and the horrors of the holiday season. And in this particular story, Andrea Langworthy, who is a newspaper columnist from Minnesota, she talks about how she grew up with four brothers and sisters, and they're not close. You know, nobody speaks to each other. Her parents had gotten divorced, and they just don't get together anymore. And one day she's talking to her mother, and her mother is sad because she has a picture of her ex-husband, the author's father, and there's a picture of him when he got remarried, and he has all of his children around him. And so they're all together, and so the mother's sad because she doesn't have a picture of her own with all of her children. And now this doesn't look likely that it's going to happen because all the kids are arguing and not getting along. So the mother tells the daughter she has a wish. She says, the next Christmas, I want us all to get together, and I want us all to get a family photo. And so the daughter, of course, is like, oh, God, you know, how are we going to make this happy? And Christmas is almost a year away at that point, so she keeps praying, well, maybe Mom will get over this, you know, maybe she'll forget about it, and we can just, you know, sweep it under the rug. But the mother doesn't forget about it. She gets more and more determined that this thing is going to happen. And so it does happen. It's the following Christmas. The whole family does get together. They all manage to get along enough to get this wonderful picture taken and have it done. And it turns out in the end that the author is really glad that she did make the effort, because her mother dies 4 years later. And they walk down the aisle and place that very same picture with their mother in the casket. And I think one of the messages that really came out of this story that I liked was that she realized in the end that her mother didn't really want the picture so much for herself, but that she wanted it for her children, that she knew that somewhere down the line that this picture would be more important to them even than it was to her.
That's right. Yeah. And that's what the gist of what I got from that story, because sometimes, you know, Mom has the foresight of what is the common denominator that will pull everyone together.
Exactly.
Yeah. And in this case, it worked very, very well. And so that's the exciting part about it. The next topic is reunited, and I like this wonderful story about Finding Marie by Dallas Kucinich. She's only 15 years old when she wrote this, and it's a wonderful story. Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay. Yes, this is I think it's the only story in the book written by a high school girl.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, she was 15 years old when she wrote this. And as a little side note, she told us later that when she actually wrote this story for a school assignment,
mm-hmm.
and she got like a D on the
on
the story. She didn't get a very good grade on the story. I don't know if she if it didn't fit the assignment or whatever it was, but.
Right.
We thought it was a beautiful story. We loved it,
mm-hmm.
and I wish I could have seen when she went back to the teacher and waved the chicken.
Let me buy a bunch of these books and give it to her.
Yeah, exactly. But anyways, the story is about the fact that she comes from a divorced home. Her parents got divorced
mm-hmm.
when she was about 5 years old, and
mm-hmm.
basically her father took off and and left the family. He didn't have any contact with her for many years. He built another family, the understandably the daughter was very upset about this.
Mm-hmm.
And one day she's on, like teenagers are, she was on MySpace on the computer, and she got this note
mm-hmm.
from somebody, and it happened to be from her stepmother, her father's
mm-hmm.
current wife, and she told her that. She had a little sister who was about 4 years younger than her, and that her little sister wanted to get to know her. And so it's a really nice story because it talks about how this girl in high school gets to know and build a relationship with her half-sister,
mm-hmm.
who happens to live more than 1,500 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
But they build this wonderful relationship, and through this process of getting to know her half-sister, she also begins to get to know the father who left her, who left the family
right.
some years ago,
yeah.
and starts to build a relationship with him and to learn about forgiveness, about being able to let go of her resentment against her father,
right.
and just being joyful that she has found this family again and has found a new little sister whom she obviously adores, as you'll find when you read the story. So it's very touching.
It is, it is. And that brings us also to a new topic, Brothers and Sisters, My Homeless Brother by Eva Juliusson,
mm-hmm.
I believe, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. This story is, as you said, the author writes about her brother, and it's kind of a sad story because the brother in high school, he was brilliant. He was had a near genius IQ. He was a National Merit Award winner. He could fix anything that you gave him. And unfortunately, when he got to his early 20s, he started to exhibit signs of mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And he became mentally ill. They don't really know what it was, probably schizophrenia or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically took off and left the family and went on the road. And for years, they would hear from this brother from time to time, but they never really knew where he was. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
he would be peaceful on the phone. Sometimes he would be scary. He would be paranoid. He would think that people were after him. And but they've never been able to get him help.
Mm-hmm.
For 18 years now, since the story was written, he's been homeless on the road, but they've never been able to get him to come home and get him some help. So it's a really nice story because through her experiences with her brother, the author has really come to have a lot of compassion for homeless people, people who are mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
She and her husband now volunteer once a month with the homeless in their community.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, she hopes that somewhere, wherever her brother is, that somebody else has the same, compassion and feeling for him, that somebody is helping out her brother as well.
It is. It's a beautiful story. And people just don't realize until you have one in your own family. To certainly
mm-hmm.
appreciate certain things like that. And that brings us to Last one that I kind of really I think to me is my favorite because I can certainly relate to that in
mm-hmm.
some ways is Parents and Kids, and the story is about A Full House by Sarah Hamica.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is a story about a woman who grew up with many, many brothers and sisters, and the way that she got these brothers and sisters was that her parents took in foster children.
Mm-hmm.
And the writer actually, what I was amazed by this story is that the writer actually seems like a remarkable person because unlike, you know, some of us who might mm-hmm. resent that our parents are bringing in all these children into our home who
right.
have a lot of problems and a lot of issues, and she really found it very rewarding to be a big sister to all of these
mm-hmm.
brothers and sisters that came through their lives over the years. Her parents ended up adopting some of them. All of them stayed in touch with the family. And she said even though they had all these kids in the family, she never felt neglected or unloved by her parents. You know,
right.
instead she really learned a lesson about what family is.
It's all about, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that you don't, family is not just your natural family, but it's what you make and what you put together, and it's the love that you share. And so it was
right.
just a really nice story.
Yeah, it's something that I think a lot of people don't realize that you can offer a lot, and just by being there, and these are the things that you're making a positive difference in someone's life and the future.
Mm-hmm.
By doing what you know, her parents did. What can we expect from you in 2010?
Well, we're going to be doing, hopefully, a follow-up to this book. It's called Chicken Soup for the Soul, Family Matters.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, we'll be looking for stories of forgiveness, quirkiness, you know, funny stories,
yeah,
serious
yeah.
stories. I'm also going to be doing a follow-up to another book that I had, a devotional book. This
right.
book will be called Devotional Stories for Mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope that listeners will visit chickensoup.com, and if they have any stories that they'd like to contribute, we're collecting stories now for both of these books for next year.
Fantastic. You know, it's just wonderful. I had the opportunity to read, of course, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Devotional Stories for Women. That's a wonderful book. And, of
mm-hmm.
course, with this, it's just heartwarming stories, and it's just perfect for the holiday season. And I'm so glad that we have this opportunity to have you, you know, to do this. We're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living?
I do. I think this book really sums it all up that
uh-huh.
right now, you know, times are tough right now. We're all going, I think, economically and everything, we're having a tough time. And I think this book really just shows us that family is really what's most important. You know, our possessions, our jobs, all of that really takes a back seat when you have family, and it's you know, that's really all we need to get through. So
very true. I mean, well spoken, because this is something that we sometimes take for granted, and
mm-hmm.
maybe it is designed this way for years that every so often we have specific holidays to be mindful about what we have at hand. So that's definitely correct. Susan, thank you for the great recipes for living and for
You're
spending
welcome.
This hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us this morning. Please join me next Tuesday morning for a special treat for the last show of 2009. With Christmas just days away, followed by the New Year's, we are proud to honor all the blessed families in America and the world. Our show theme will be a blended family holiday, challenges and rewards. Joining me to talk about this wonderful, challenging and rewarding experience will be Shirley Crest Dudley, a licensed professional counselor from Charlotte, North Carolina. Shirley has two master's degrees, one in marriage and family counseling and the other in education. She is also a part of a blended family herself, and is raising two children and three stepchildren with her husband, Eric. Over the years, I've learned for me, myself personally, from my nine moms, that in order for me to truly experience and appreciate unconditional love, I, on the receiving end, must consciously allow myself to be loved. And with that in mind, Shirley and I will be discussing the various opportunities and solutions to truly experience a very rewarding blended family holiday. For additional information about this show, future shows, and for my weekly recipes for a living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. And thank you, everyone, for listening this morning. Have a wonderful week. Susan, thank you again, and have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.